From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection, brought to you by Walker Tire and Auto. Broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance studio. It's going to be a great show. I have a special guest joining me today, Nebraska State Senator Steve Halloran, freshman senator from Hastings, Nebraska, and he's going to give us the inside scoop on life in the state legislature. Senator Halloran serves on the Agriculture Committee and also the Judiciary Committee down in the legislature, which are two vital committees. And so he's really been a key member in the freshman class of senators who helped shift the Nebraska legislature to a more conservative direction, solidly pro-life and pro-family. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. It's always special when you can hear directly from an elected official and get their take on what's happening down in the state capitol. So that's where I'm going to lead off today. But first, I want to make sure that everyone knows about the fantastic deals happening over at Walker Tire and Auto. Every car at some point will need new tires. So the next time your vehicle is in need of a tire change, be sure you take it to Walker Tire and Auto, where you can get the Walker Tire Advantage, offering you free oil changes and more for the life of your tires. Walker Tire and Auto is also now offering free video vehicle health inspections, free with each visit. Hear from expert technicians and see for yourself how your vehicle is doing right from your email or phone. And try Walker while you work. Register at www.walkerwhileyouwork.com and get free vehicle pickup at your work and have your vehicle repaired, returned, and ready when you need it. So whatever your vehicle needs, Walker Tire in Omaha is ready to help. They've been serving Omaha customers for over six decades and are always going the extra mile for you. Well, I'm very pleased to have joining me on the show today a special guest, State Senator Steve Halloran, representing District 33 in Hastings. Senator Halloran, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Nate, for having me.
Well, Senator, yeah, you serve on the Agriculture Committee and the Judiciary Committees in the state legislature, which are two vital committees. And I learned something new and kind of fun. In addition to your extensive background and experience in both farming and agriculture, you are actually also the co-owner of several Huhat Mongolian grills across the country. And I knew I liked you, Senator, but when I learned you owned my all-time favorite restaurant, I thought, this is someone who really gets it.
Well, I appreciate the plug there, Nate. That's been a fun experience for my wife and me to have part ownership in a restaurant. It kind of fell right in sync with having spent much of my life farming. So we spent some of our life raising the food, and then the balance of it, we've been serving food to customers at a restaurant. So
that's great. And so you're using that experience now and your background in agriculture down in the state legislature. And we're really at an extraordinarily interesting and tense point in this time nationally when it comes to politics and just how far the political divide has really grown, and also the lack of civil discourse. Has the sour national mood affected the state legislature here in Nebraska?
Well, I think, you know, certainly you can maybe draw the conclusion that might be reflected here locally. It all depends on the issue, Nate. But when it gets down to the more serious issues, oftentimes social issues or issues dealing with, for example, with corrections, prisons, and dealing with those kind of issues in judiciary, you know, emotions can run high regardless of political persuasion. So I think it's something that's always been there. I think the press is kind of highlighting it to maybe more today than they did in the past, but it's there. It's just part of the nature of being in government and representing your constituents to the best of your ability, trying to recognize what their beliefs and principles are, and relating that in the legislature.
Right, and so this has been your first year in the legislature. So how different has your experience so far been from what you might have anticipated now that you've been through your first session in the legislature?
Oh, I'd have to say, Nate, it wasn't, the experience after having been through the first session, really there weren't any huge surprises. I kind of had prepared myself not to set my expectations too high so I wouldn't be too disappointed, but trying to be realistic about what we could attain and what we would have to work longer at and harder at.
Right. And so, you know, probably like any year, there were some good things that happened and some not so good things. So in your mind, what needs to be accomplished or happen next session that maybe didn't get done this year?
Well, it was, interestingly enough, the last session was what they would refer to as the long session, 90-day session. And it's a longer session because we have to deal with formulating and agreeing upon and passing a balanced budget. I would have to say if there was one overarching thing that was a disappointment to me was that process. After we finished the session, I reflecting back on it and during the session, I was not pleased with some of the procedures that we used or the assumptions that we made in coming together on a budget. We started the year in January with a $900 million shortfall and nearly $1 trillion. And that hole had to be filled because we were still in the last half of that biennium. And we accomplished that. Part of that came from the rainy day fund. Part of that money to fill that hole came from various agencies that accumulated funds over time that they had not spent. And so we were able to successfully fill that $900 million hole. But then we started the process of creating the budget for the next biennium. And unfortunately, we did something that still puzzles me a little bit, but we started this next biennium budget based upon the previous budget. And reflecting on that, it makes no sense to me at all because the previous budget was a shortfall, nearly $1 trillion, and yet we started with that as a baseline for creating a new budget. And so I have, and I this is shared with many other senators, have a deep concern that the revenues aren't coming into the state like they had been projected. And if that continues to be the case, it's up to the governor. But if that continues to be the case, we may very likely see a special session sometime this fall to deal with that and rectify it before it gets to be too big of a hole again in the budget.
Well, and that was my next question. With tax collections continuing to fall well below the forecast and further growing the state budget deficit, do you get the sense that we are in fact possibly inching towards needing that special session to address the budget?
Well, again, it's clearly the governor's ultimate decision to call a special session. I'm sure he'll be counseling with the speaker and with the Senator Stinner, the appropriations chair. He'll be counseling with them and his own budget people to determine whether or not he should call that special session. My guess is that that will likely happen because the revenues have been short, as I mentioned, had been short of projections. So it's better to attack these problems early rather than allow the hole get too deep.
I appreciate that analysis, and I'm sure most Nebraskans do as well. And one thing I also wanted to be sure to mention is that, Senator, you were really the most conservative member on what turned out to be a pretty liberal judiciary committee, and you often very courageously stood alone on difficult but important issues. So how have you been able to stay true to your values and what you really came there to do and what can sometimes be a very hostile environment?
Well, you just vote based on the principles that you have and let the cards settle where they lay. I certainly had no problem in taking being the what some would maybe conclude would be the obstinate conservative vote in a rather liberal judiciary committee. That was okay with me. I certainly would have preferred to have a few other conservative senators that might have been appointed to the committee, but that didn't happen. But that's okay, because even though I was not able to be part of an overriding vote on some issues, when those bills passed through committee and came to the floor, everybody has the awareness of what the committee members' votes were. And so if it happened to be an issue that I voted no on, senators would come to me and talk to me about that bill and inquire why my vote was a no vote. So even though you have some influence within the committee, you still have some influence on the floor during the debate in an effort to clarify your position or your principles on that bill.
Well, that certainly speaks to your leadership and the important role you play in the state legislature. And I know at Nebraska Family Alliance, we are always working to really promote life and further the pro-life cause and defend the unborn. And I know that that's an issue that you are passionate about as well. Why is being pro-life, not just in talk, but in deed and how you vote, so important to you personally?
Well, to me, Nate, question of character. To me, if someone is unwilling to take a stance positively for pro-life at any stage of life, then it says something, or it's at least a reflection on the judgment of that person, not only on those specific issues, but then I tend to look at their judgment on other issues as well and say, well, they took a negative stance on pro-life issues. I tend to challenge their judgment on other questions then as well.
Absolutely. I appreciate your approach to that issue and the work you're doing to support pro-life legislation down at the state capitol. And you also this past session prioritized a bill that would call for a constitutional convention, the Convention of States. And that's legislation that's really about trying to get some power back to the states that they were originally intended to have and rein in the size, scope, and power of the federal government. And that bill didn't get enough support to pass this year. So what are your plans moving forward with that legislation?
Well, it's to your point, it's a bill that is reflective of Article 5 of our national constitution. And briefly, Article 5 lays out the methodology allowed for amending the Constitution. And there's two methods. One, which we're all aware of, is through Congress. Congress can propose an amendment to the Constitution. It has to reach a two-thirds threshold vote. And then if it reaches that, then it's sent to the states, and then has to pass in four-fifths of the states. So it's a high threshold to pass. The other method, Article 5 of the Constitution, allows for what's called a convention of states, not to be confused, and this is can be confusing, but not to be confused with a constitutional convention. A constitutional convention is a convention drawn to redo the whole Constitution. That's not what this is. The language in Article 5 is very clear, calls for a convention of states, in which if two-thirds of the states call for a convention of states, then that convention is gathered and representatives from all the states then can meet and propose amendments to the Constitution. And ours is very narrowly defined as three of them, three issues, three potential amendments. One is term limits for Congress. The other one is fiscal restraint on the federal government, and the third one is regulatory constraint on the federal government. So it would have to fall within those three. But the same ratification process, once we would come up with proposals for amendments, it would still have to be ratified by 4/5 of the states. So it's a high threshold, but I'm quite excited about it. We're making some progress. We did have enough votes to pass this resolution in the unicameral. We fell short on the number of votes to break a filibuster. And so we're going to keep coming back at it until we can muster enough votes to break the filibuster and vote on the issue.
Well, I appreciate you walking us through that. And speaking of the filibuster, that's a tool that's being used more frequently than ever before in the legislature. Do you think that that is a trend that is going to continue, the use of the filibuster and partisan politics to really stop legislation dead in its tracks, or do you see maybe we'll start to see some more reaching across the aisle and senators on both sides being willing, being really open to discussion and allowing themselves to hear the arguments that are coming from both sides?
Well, Nate, I would hope for the latter, but again, realistically, I'm not going to hold out a huge amount of hope for that. The filibuster has been, unfortunately, I think it's been misused a little bit too often, too frequently and inappropriately in some cases. But the way our rules are in the Nebraska State Legislature is it's required to have 33 votes to stop a filibuster or for cloture on the filibuster. Currently, it takes 30 votes to override a governor's veto. To me, there's a disparity in that. It shouldn't be more or less for either one, for an override of a governor veto or overriding a filibuster. But we attempted to change the rules early in this session. We weren't successful at doing that. And we can't do that until a year from now. It's every 2 years that we address the rules that the legislature runs under. So I'm sure we'll come back and readdress those rules and try to get some equilibrium.
That's encouraging to hear. Senator, my last question for you, as someone who is a member of our state legislature, in your view, how can citizens be involved and impact the legislature, and what kind of difference can they make?
Well, a proactive way for anybody and everybody to be involved is to, and I got to be careful with this, I might get a whole lot more calls than I have been, but it is to directly contact your representative, your state senator, on whatever issue is close to your heart, and have an open discussion with them and let them understand where, from your perspective as a constituent, you stand on a given issue. That's important because you can come down here and get quite blinded quite easily just by being surrounded by lobbyists, for example, or other senators. It's so important for us to hear from our constituents.
Senator Holleran, thank you for being on the show today. You have been a champion for families and conservative values, and I appreciate the work that you're doing in our state.
Well, thanks for having me again, Nate. I appreciate it.
I always love having guests on the show, especially when they're an elected official. It's so encouraging to know that we have someone like Senator Holleran in the state legislature at the Capitol advocating for the values and championing the beliefs that we cherish. It's so essential. In order to have good policy, you have to have good people in office, and that's what we have with Senator Holleran. And I also love what Walker Tire and Auto is doing to help transform the auto repair industry, to make sure you get the best deals on the service or repair that your vehicle actually needs. Walker Tire and Auto was voted into the 2017 Best of Omaha Winner Circle, and for good reason. Only at Walker Tire and Auto can you get the Walker Tire Advantage, offering you free oil changes and more for the life of your tires. Walker Tire and Auto is ready to help take care of you for all your vehicle service and maintenance needs, which now includes free video vehicle health inspections, free with each visit. Hear from their expert technicians and see for yourself how your vehicle is doing right from your email or phone. Whatever your vehicle needs, Walker Tire in Omaha is ready to help. Okay, so one story that's been going around the news a little bit that's got me really fired up has to do with the mainstream media and the Southern Poverty Law Center labeling conservative Christian organizations as hate groups and attacking them and the Trump administration for having our Attorney General Jeff Sessions speak at a session hosted by the Alliance Defending Freedom. And so this upset people in the media and far left groups who didn't like that Attorney General Sessions was addressing this group. And so ABC News came out and ran this story that Attorney General Sessions, you know, addresses hate group in closed door session. And so, well, first of all, they did come out and release the speech that the Attorney General gave. And it turns out everything that he said was just really spot on about the First Amendment. He didn't say anything that hasn't already been said about religious freedom or the First Amendment. And if anything, it actually just showed what a deep understanding he has for the history and heritage of religious liberty in our country and the importance of defending religious freedom for all people here in the United States. But of course, this wasn't good enough. This still upset people on the left, especially the Southern Poverty Law Center, who labels different groups and organizations as hate groups. And this now includes groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom and Family Research Council. And those are two organizations that I have had the great privilege of getting to work very closely with through working at the Nebraska Family Alliance. And those groups are actually our national allies, and we partner with them and advocate for the same policies that have caused these Christian groups to be labeled and reported on as hate groups. And so I know a lot of people at these organizations personally, and they are good people. They are good Americans that believe religious freedom is a fundamental right endowed to us by our Creator and enshrined in the Constitution that all Americans possess and should not be infringed upon. So when the Southern Poverty Law Center says that these organizations are a hate group, and ABC News basically reports that as fact and gives credence to the Southern Poverty Law Center, they are labeling all conservatives and all Christians who believe in the First Amendment as a hate group that should be literally in the same category as the KKK and terrorist organizations, actual groups who represent evil, and they lump them together with Christian groups that they disagree with, even though these groups, like Nebraska Family Alliance, hold the same policy positions on marriage and religious freedom that Barack Obama campaigned on. And what you'll notice and what's frustrating is that when a largely discredited far-left organization like the Southern Poverty Law Center reports something like this, the mainstream media takes it and runs with it and reports it as fact. They would never do that with a conservative group when they report something. And, you know, ABC News and NBC and all those other groups who push this story should really be ashamed for promoting what accounts to nothing more than journalistic malpractice. But all of this talk about hate and hate groups, as frustrating as it is, it doesn't surprise me. In fact, it actually reminded me of Scripture in John chapter 15, when Jesus is speaking to his disciples and he tells them, "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. For if you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. But we don't belong to the world, and really I think it's out of spite that they hate us in these groups, because we are not going to sit idly by and sacrifice our God-given freedoms at the altar of political correctness." And I'll tell you something else. The verse right before the scripture I just quoted says this: "This is my command, love each other." That's what we're about. That's what we believe. We don't preach hate. We believe in the equal treatment of all people, and that whether you are black, white, gay, or straight, Christian or atheist, the Constitution protects everyone equally. It is those who instantly label anyone they disagree with as hateful and bigoted who are trying to shut down conversation, suppress free speech, and take away the rights that have made our country the greatest force for good from any one nation that the world has ever known. The right to live and work according to your beliefs, no matter your religion, should unite us all on common ground rather than divide us. That's how I see it, and I hope for everyone listening who is passionate about religious freedom and concerned about the state of religious freedom in our country that you will partner with the Nebraska Family Alliance to help preserve and protect religious freedom here in our state. For all things related to family, freedom, and life, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.